Okay, today's February 1st, Senate Finance Committee will come to order. We have before us Senate File 56. Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, members, distinguished guests, thank you. I would just point out that Mr. Eric Nauman is the fiscal analyst that is going to help me out with this. He indicated that he was here earlier and had to run downstairs quickly and come back up, so he isn't here at the moment. But I believe I can proceed because I don't think anything he's going to say is contingent upon my my testimony. So we'll go ahead. I am Dave Thompson, and I'm here to talk about Senate File 56, which has four components to it. However, only one of the components of the bill, members, is relevant to today's discussion. But just so you have some background and understanding of the overall bill that we're talking about, let me briefly talk to you about the other three components of the bill and tell you what they are, at which time I'll talk about the fourth element of the bill, which is what is germane here today in front of the Finance Committee. First, this bill contains a two-year pay freeze for all school district employees, and this includes a hard freeze, as we call it, on steps and lanes, all of that sort of thing. And that's component number one of the bill. No fiscal component to that as far as the state general fund is concerned. The second element of the bill is a repeal of what has come to be known as the maintenance of effort for counselors, psychologists, nurses, and certain other mental health professionals within the school districts. And that is part of the Safe Schools program. And right now we have a state mandate requiring that school districts not decrease the amount of resources put toward those elements, toward the counselors, nurses, et cetera, and this bill repeals that. Once again, no fiscal component to that. Third, there is also currently in existence a state law mandate requiring that school districts spend a minimum of 2% of their budget on staff development. So that, again, is a straight repealer. This bill, if passed into law, would remove that mandate and allow the individual districts the opportunity to determine what percentage of their budget would be allocated to staff development. So, again, I give you those just by way of background, and now it is the fourth component of the bill that we are here today to consider, members, because there is a fiscal component to this that impacts upon the general fund. Currently in law, there is a provision that requires school districts and the union with which they are negotiating to come to an agreement on the next contract on or before January 15th of the year that the current contract lapses. In the event that no such agreement is reached, a $25 per student, for lack of a better term, fine, is levied against the district, and they must send that money back to the general fund. And so, for example, Minneapolis failed to get their contract done by the 15th of January, and I believe, give or take a few dollars, the penalty paid back to the state was $800,000. So the reason this has, members, an impact upon the upcoming state budget forecast is that they actuarially determine what they anticipate to be the dollars coming back to the general fund from the fines paid by school districts back to the general fund. So I would direct your attention to the Senate File 56 information. And what I would direct you to is the subtotal SF56 line. And you will see there that in fiscal 2012, there is $525,000 that is forecast not to come into the general fund that would otherwise have come into the general fund if this January 15th deadline provision is repealed. Then in fiscal year 2013, there is $46,000. So the net I misstated that. I was looking at totals. The actual loss of revenue would be $630,000 for fiscal year 12 and $70,000 for 13 for a total net loss to the general fund of $700,000. However, because of the way the formulas work and some other elements kicking in, there would actually be some dollars that would not be paid out to the general fund as reflected up above that under non-public pupil aid, non-public pupil transportation, up above that, and I'm going to have Mr. Nauman explain how all of that works. So the bottom line is the key number for the committee to consider, Madam Chair, is the $571,000 net number under subtotal over there under fiscal year 12 and 13, because that is the forecasted loss to the general fund over that two-year period. And with that, I would like to turn this over to the fiscal analyst, Mr. Eric Nauman, and he can do a much better job of explaining to you why we have some numbers going down, some numbers going up, how they work together. And then, obviously, members, I would be happy to answer any questions you have pertaining to it, and then, of course, defer to Mr. Nauman for some of the technical expertise on how the numbers work. Mr. Nauman, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Thompson. Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair and members, Eric Nauman with the Senate Fiscal Staff. And I think Senator Thompson did a very good job of tackling the primary fiscal effect of associated with this bill. As he mentioned, there's a $25 penalty for any school district that doesn't settle its contract by January 15th of the contract year. And based on historical averages, the Department of Education includes in the forecasting process a $700,000 assumption about revenues lost. Of course, that's a historical average, and last year, in the last contract cycle, we saw that Minneapolis didn't settle by that deadline, and they were penalized $800,000. So it is a historical average. It's not a precise number. But that number on line 18 is what's reflected as a cost against the bill associated with the repeal of that penalty. Because of the aid payment shift, that loss gets allocated over 2 years. And here the assumption, because the forecast includes a 90-10 payment schedule, is that $700,000 loss actually shows up in general education appropriations as $630,000 in fiscal 12, $70,000 in fiscal 13, and then it's mirrored in the tail biennium as well. I'll skip over line 13 for just a brief moment and mention lines 14 and 15. These are two non-public pupil aid line and a non-pupil public transportation line. Because the bill includes a freeze and those formulas are forecasted with some assumptions about salary increases built in, minor salary increases, there's assumed to be about a 1% savings off of those appropriations, so there's a little bit of savings associated with those two lines. And you'll note that it is over the course of just the 12-13 biennium. So only the shifted amount gets carried into the second biennium. That's the 4,000, the 5,000, and the 7,000 on those lines. If members were to flip the page over and look at lines 48 through 54, there is a property tax effect associated with this bill. It saves property taxes in fiscal year 13 on career and technical, health and safety, and school-aged care. Similar to the non-public lines, there is assumption about salary growth in those levies that will not occur as a result of this bill. So there's $193,000 of levy savings. And members will recall that in education finance last year, the legislature established with something called a property tax recognition shift, which forces school districts to recognize property taxes early when there is a levy decline. There's less levy to recognize early, so there's less savings. As a result of less savings, there's a spend. So if now flip back to line 13, the PTRS savings reduction line is $94,000 of increased cost associated with levies, savings foregone. Just sort of a complicated concept. I'm seeing nodding heads, so I'm hoping that makes sense. So as a result, the bottom line for this bill, line 20, $525,000, as Senator Thompson mentioned, in 12, $571,000 for the biennium, and $782,000 for the tail. Yeah, I'm looking at that
Senator
formula.
Goodwin?
There's something funky there on that formula.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Nauman. Mr. Thompson, or Senator Thompson, are you saying that this is a $571 loss to the state general fund, your bill?
$571,000 estimated loss is my understanding,
okay,
correct?
Okay, so it's going to cost the state $571,000 to do your bill, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Nowen, would it be correct to say, though, well, it's a loss to the state general fund, it is actually an increase in funding to the school districts?
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, based on the assumption of loss, yes.
But, Madam Chair, that's not the same amount of loss. I mean, the same amount of gain for the school districts. They're only gaining 193,000 in property tax, potential property tax relief.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Senator Thompson.
Senator Goodwin. But you see, the 571,000, or actually the 700,000 would be money that would have been paid to the state that now will stay in the school districts. Correct, Mr. Nauman? So, in fact, it does end up being dollar for dollar money that stays with the districts as opposed to coming back to the state.
And, Mr. Nauman, and the $193,000 is actually property tax savings to property owners?
Madam Chair, yes.
Does anyone else have questions? Okay, is there any other discussion about the bill?
Oh, yeah.
We are hoping to stay on the fiscal impact of the proposal, since it has been aired in the Education Committee already. The policy provisions have been aired there. So, Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Thompson, how do you expect to replace the over half a million dollars that you're taking from the state general fund with your bill, being we're in such trouble in the state budget?
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson would like to respond to
that. Yes, I would like to respond to that. There's two more bills on the docket for today. And when all is said and done, the state budget will gain the savings in that are represented in one of those bills will cover this loss, as well as the additional department costs and some rulemaking. And the result will be that there will be 557,000 to the good for the state, and that carries on into the next 515,000 to the good, and in the next biennium beyond 449,000 that will continue on.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Any questions from the audience related to the fiscal note? If not, Senator Thompson? Were there some people who wanted to testify? Why don't you come forward now?
Madam Chair.
Senator Perry.
Madam Chair, just for my clarification, the testimony that we will hear now is just on the fiscal note and not on the other parts of the bill. Is that what I just understood?
That is the due diligence of the Finance Committee that we're focusing on.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Julie Blaha, and I'm the president of Anoka-Hennepin Education Minnesota. And I'm on leave from my position as a middle school math teacher. I want to speak to some of the issues this bill is causing us in Anoka-Hennepin passing our QCOMP plan. That has an impact on our local district funding to the tune of approximately $10 million when you combine the state and local funding that QCOMP provides. Our plan has been approved by the MDE in January, and our membership and school board will vote on whether or not to accept this proposal in early March. Now, we've been working hard to increase collaboration between teachers and administrators in our district. In fact, research is indicating that when we work together in these kind of collaborative teams, that that interaction leads to increased student achievement, and I would also suggest it leads to better policy as well. In fact, QCOMP was designed to be a collaborative program, and we'd have to work together throughout the program to make it work. Now, the bill, which I understand attempts to protect QCOMP funding, does get in our ability to pass the plan, in that it seems other parts of the bill get in the way of the collaborative nature of QCOMP. When you are saying that we're not going to trust local districts to work collaboratively to figure out their contracts, it gets in the way of the intent of QCOMP being a collaborative program as well. So as I attempt to pass this among my membership and tell them that, no, we are all committed to collaborating, the state and the district and our union, when they see this bill, I've gotten a lot of questions saying, well, is that true? Is the state truly committed to that collaborative piece? Should we vote for this, or is this actually, are we not all on the same page? So I would suggest we have demonstrated in my district that we can work together. This plan that we put together was one of the most collaborative pieces we've put together in decades in Anoka-Hennepin. Because we had to work together, the plan is more creative. The plan, we all made compromises. We all took risks. We all gave something up. This is exactly how we hope collaboration works. In fact, we've also worked together in our last round of bargaining. We met our district's offer. We took a freeze in the second year, though there was some lane movement. For most people, it was a hard freeze. By the January 15th deadline, I might add. I believe we've demonstrated that we can collaborate and come up with solutions to work that work both for students and stay within budgets. This bill, I believe, gets in the way of that intent. So in the interest of collaboration and our attempt to pass QCOMP in my local, I hope that you will look at passing on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blaha. Mm-hmm. Any questions for her? Okay. Would you introduce yourself?
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jody Olson, president of the Wayzata Education Association and a proud 23-year employee of the district. Thank you for your time today. The teachers of the Wayzata School District are opposed to this bill for two reasons. It eliminates local control in the collective bargaining process, and it will not have an impact on the state budget. We have strong working relationships with our district administration, our school board, and members of our community. Due to these relationships, I am confident that our negotiators from the union and the school district would once again negotiate a contract that would be financially responsible for the school district. Please consider the economic impact of steps and lanes. We have many teachers who will be finishing their master's degree this summer as well as next year. These teachers will have spent $10,000 to $15,000 pursuing their degrees at excellent local institutions. These teachers were pursuing these degrees in the hopes of completing a program that is highly valued in our district and rewarded with a salary increase that has traditionally been a part of all of our contracts, which in turn would be used to repay these loans, but also serve as a stronger financial basis for our families and communities. I ask you to consider these requests in light of the fact that the proposed pay freeze will not impact the state budget. However, our teachers do impact our state and local economy by paying taxes on their homes, supporting local businesses, vacationing in our state parks and resorts, and pursuing educational opportunities in colleges and universities throughout Minnesota. We believe the wage freeze, in combination with the freeze on steps and lanes, will impact the local and state economy. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, if I may, as I said, the only issue we're dealing with is, in terms of the fiscal note, is the $25 penalty. In light of the witness's position on local control, I would imagine that what we're doing is absolutely consistent with local control, rather than the state coming down and saying, somebody's going to have to pay a penalty if you don't reach a contract by an arbitrary deadline that's picked. We're saying local control, sell your contract when you want to. So as it pertains to this hearing today on the $25 provision, I think we share goals there. It's a local control issue.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Thompson. Senator Bono.
Madam Chair, and Ms. Olson, welcome to the committee. Both Senator Olson and I represent the district that that Ms. Olson's at, and I can attest that you do have an outstanding relationship with the administration, with the school community, and they feel that you do an outstanding job of collaborating. And so just for the record, that is why I ended up in committee voting against the bill, because while at the end of the day we may come to a negotiated freeze with all the teachers and all, you know, who knows how this will end up, I am for the dialogue and the partnership and everybody coming together, but appreciate the dilemma that we're all in. So.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make one statement. There was a statement made that this won't solve the budget deficit. There has never been any claim, either by the author or in any of the presentations, that this has any impact on the state deficit. The issue is trying to give some tools and help to our schools, because it has been impossible for a number of years now with the economic downturn to for schools to obtain the revenue to pay the increasing salaries that have been negotiated without laying off employees and substantial numbers of employees. And this is saying take a breather so that we can save some of those jobs until we can get through this for the school districts. Everybody else if we pay attention in the private sector, in other institutions, are not only glad to have a job, are taking freezes or cuts in order to enable people to continue working and to work through this. That's all this is about. It's nothing of any disrespect for teachers. And I think if you look at it throughout, hopefully it will mean that more will be able to benefit ultimately if we can actually help the school districts ride out this process. So that is why I do support it. It's not mean-spirited. It is just meant to try to keep our system rolling while we and benefit students too, because when you cut teachers and other personnel, you end up increasing class sizes, and then the hue and cry is, well, we've got to decrease class sizes. There isn't any way that a number of years, you add all of the elements of the agreement and the percentage increase, that the state would ever be able to keep up with that. And it's bothered me for some time that we've got an unsustainable system, and ultimately it might sink of its own weight. And there's none of us that want that to happen.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I don't think this is an education bill. I think this is a labor bill. This is a union issue. And in the district that I just represented on the school board, Columbia Heights, we had the teachers all agreed to no increase for the past several years, and so did the administration. And we were able to reduce our levy by 14% this last year. And I think that's what happens in negotiations oftentimes. And a lot of the teachers understand that there isn't any money for the districts, and that they can't increase property taxes more than what's already happened in the past few years with all the shifts that have happened. But Senator Thompson, I have a question for you, a fiscal question. On this language here, you say that it prohibits the administration from getting as well, because it includes any employee, but you say, you know, cost of living adjustments across the board increases, one other thing you had here, lump sum payments. But what you don't include for the administration in any way is a potential bonuses. Now, you haven't been here that long, but if you don't remember, a few years ago, administration was able to negotiate themselves quite significant salaries by having a lot of additional money for mileage and car allowances and bonuses and so forth. And so you got some pretty big holes in your language here about that the district will be able to get around if they want to increase administrative salaries, just so you know.
Madam Chair.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, Senator Goodwin, thank you. First off, my understanding is that a very high percentage of school district superintendents have taken freezes over the last couple of years, but I would respectfully disagree with your interpretation of the statutory language. In the second sentence under salary freeze, it says this section prohibits any increase, including but not limited to, and then it goes into that language would typically be interpreted by a court interpreting a statute to say any increase, and I don't think any reasonable person could argue that a bonus is not an increase. However, to be honest with you, my intent was to freeze everything, including district superintendents, and I would, you know, once this gets to the floor, frankly, or if you want to talk to me afterwards, I wouldn't be opposed to an amendment clarifying that, although I don't believe it's necessary, because I think when it says any, I think it covers it.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, it refers to salaries, and salaries are usually considered, wages and salaries are not considered bonuses. So I disagree with you that it does cover bonuses or specifically mileage or car allowances.
Madam Chair, it says any increase, you know, salary or wages, and I guess I can't imagine that it would be a good argument to make with a straight face in front of a court that a bonus is not salary or wages and doesn't constitute any kind of an increase. But there again, if clarifying language is suggested, I'm not opposed to that. My intent is to freeze wages for all employees, not just teachers.
Senator Goodwin, I'd also point out on 2.26 that it does say it prohibits increases in the form of lump sum payments.
Right, Madam Chair, but I'm talking about some of the bonuses are not given in lump sum payments. They're given over a period of time.
Welcome, Ms. Salzhagen. We have about 5 minutes left. We do have two other bills on the agenda, and we need to keep moving on this. And so if we would address that, the fiscal issues.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota, and I will keep my comments brief. I do want to echo the statements that we don't see any savings with the wage freeze portions of this bill. I do want to echo Ms. Anderson's comments about teachers who are in the process of getting their master's, taking college courses. I received an email from a married couple, both teachers, and they are soon to complete their master's, and they have spent approximately, I believe it was $15,000 to educate themselves to be better teachers. And with this wage freeze, they will still have to pay the loans that are due, but yet this promise that they felt that they had with the contract would no longer be accessible because of this. I also want to make sure that you understand that the local negotiation process does work and that a number of our locals, at least 20 of them last year, a researcher determined that over 20 of them actually took hard freezes. No schedule improvement, steps in one or both of the years 2 years ago. The budget situation has worsened. We would guess that number would increase significantly. I also ask you to think about those districts that did take hard freezes compared to those districts who did not. So now this legislation would say that they would have to take a four-year freeze. So the decisions that are made at a local level are indeed local decisions. And so we would ask that you not impose this decision on them. Excuse me. I do have some statistics to share with you on January 15th contract settlement deadline. We would oppose this bill because another reason is because it would repeal the January 15th contract settlement deadline.
Thank you.
As you can see from the chart, the tall bars are those years when we do not have the January 15th contract settlement deadline and a number of districts are not settled. The deadline fosters collaboration, just like in the legislature, where you have your first, second, third committee deadline, and ultimately the last day of the session. It forces the parties to come together with more realistic offers. And to just quickly share with you the last two sheets, if you look at the second sheet, when you look at the impact financially on the school districts, I know that's what you want to focus on today, if you look on the fiscal impact. Some will say that as you get closer to the January 15th contract settlement deadline, that the teacher salaries increase. Actually, it's the reverse. The numbers here are in the column 2009-2010. The settlements are at 1.78, but by the time you get to January 15th, they are 0.75%. This is a cumulative, so in aggregate, so that actually the settlements are even less than that because they are put in aggregate. So I want to make sure that you understand that. And then the last document I would just highlight that the January 15th actually, again, fosters collaboration. We don't see strikes in those years. And the last thing that very briefly I will mention is a 2% staff development set aside. at a time when you and all of us want to hold schools accountable. We're fine with that. We want to improve student achievement. That is one of our goals as well. Repealing the 2% staff development set aside means that there is not a voice between in a discussion between the teachers, a required voice between the teachers and the district about the needs of the teachers and how we could best spend those staff development dollars. You just heard testimony from Ms. Blaha about the importance of QComp and what it's doing in their district, and those staff development dollars are used there as well. I think by shutting down some of these, we actually take away the innovation, the creativity, and the collaboration that we have in our school districts today.
Madam Chair. Okay, thank you. I think a lot of those issues probably were discussed in the education committees.
Madam Chair, I think we are straying into the policy discussions, and I would hope that you would consider my motion to move the bill.
I do see one other testifier at the table. Is it related to the fiscal impact of the bill? Then we'll recognize him before you make the motion.
The state fiscal impact.
The state fiscal impact, correct.
Actually, it's partially a question and partially
identify yourself,
a statement.
Please.
My name is Dan Campo. I am the lobbyist representing the Minnesota School Counselors. Just on lines 2.12, 2.13, and 2.14, ending in clause 6. That piece is below that is maintenance of effort. I'm not here to discuss that today, but there is a piece of this which strikes out the lines that says a school district must set aside $3 per pupil in the Safe Schools levy for the purposes of funding positions for across the state in counselors and other things. That's a multi-million dollar piece, and by striking that, then where does the money go? The history on that was the Safe Schools levy was raised from $27 to $30, with the $3 caveat being put in specifically for that. So does that count as a state fiscal piece? Now the $3 goes back to where?
Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair, it's a pleasure to be part of the fiscal staff and not have to deal as intricately with some of these questions. But in section one of the bill, members, I'll call your attention to line 1.10. The Safe Schools levy is established in total at $30 multiplied times the district suggested marginal cost pupil units. So that's a total figure. It's probably about $28, $29 million statewide. When Mr. Campo references the lines that are stricken on 2.12 to 2.19, that $3 is a part of that $30. So in effect, what that stricken language does is make that money available for all the purposes of Safe Schools uses rather than segregating $3 of that as a part of that one use. So it does not carry a total fiscal effect because it doesn't change the levy and it doesn't change the amount of revenue that a school district has available to levy.
It basically provides flexibility to the school district.
Madam Chair, much more succinctly put.
Thank you.
That's because senators are so succinct.
Someone else coming to the table, if you would identify yourself. In the meantime, I'd like to announce we do have a quorum present before we take a vote.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's an honor to testify before you today. My name is Matt Toburin, representing SEIU Local 284, the public school support staff, and I understand your time is brief, so I'll truncate my comments and keep them related to the fiscal impacts of this bill. We have two recommendations for this bill that could improve the savings to school districts, further protect students, and possibly save additional hundreds of jobs. And the first recommendation really has to go to Senator Goodwin's question about the performance bonuses that are paid out to school administration. And we just believe in a bill that asks that really the core of shared sacrifice of asking all employees of the school district to take a sacrifice to protect our students, that issue should be clarified. In the metro area, it's common to have salaries of school administration of $180,000 a year, full health benefits, a car allowance, and then on top of that, a performance bonus that could be $5,000 to $30,000. That is looked at as sort of an entire package. So a freeze of that is much different than a freeze of a food service worker at $9.16 an hour. So we would recommend that some clarifying language specifying that those bonuses would be considered part of this as well. And then the other second recommendation to that would be if this is so important to save this money for these school districts, then perhaps for the two-year duration of this bill, it would be worthwhile to look at no public school employee making more than the governor of the state of Minnesota for the two-year duration of this bill. And if it's that important to protect the students, then perhaps it's important to look at capping that salary at the level of the governor of Minnesota for 2 years. And with that, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Tobering. I think it's time for a motion. There can be further discussion after the motion is made.
I renew the motion.
Okay,
Madam Chair, I'd like
Senator,
to get a roll call vote.
Senator Olson moves that Senate File 56 be recommended to pass and be sent to the floor. And Senator Goodwin requests a roll call vote.
Senator Anderson?
No.
Senator Berglund? Senator Bonhoff?
No.
Senator Cohen? Senator Fischbach?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Hahn?
Yes.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Senator Langseth?
No.
Senator Magnus?
Yes.
Senator Newman?
Yes.
Senator Nienau?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
Yes.
Chair Roebling?
Yes. The vote of 9-4, Senate File 56 is passed and sent to the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Our next bill will be Senate File 69, Senator Olson.
He's got that lump in the floor.
Something I got to get.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 69 is a bill that has been passed by the Senate for each of the past 2 years, and I think made it all the way to the governor's desk, but it's been in bills with a variety of other things, those famous omnibus policy bills that ended up being vetoed, but not for the reason of this bill. This bill actually saves money for the state at the same time as relieving some mandates. It's referred to as homeschool mandate relief, but it also relieves mandates in terms of the role of the superintendent in the school districts, and sometimes a fairly tedious process that has brought about a rather broad coalition of support for it. The administrators, school board people, the public safety, because they're involved with the driver ed component of the bill, provision in it that saves the money, and the one that we're addressing here today is the willingness of the folks with schools that are below the size of 15, which would encompass homeschools, to have access to the textbook aid and to the guidance and health services of the school. And that is, you may not know that in the textbook aid situation, the books are actually ordered by the school. And of course, in a homeschool family with several children and several ages, that can be a long list, where in the non-public school, where they may be ordering a set from one company for a particular purpose that constitute the allowance that our state provides for this. And so, and then they become the owners of the book afterwards, this public school does. So it's a lot of bookkeeping and accounting on the part of the school district. So that one, they're happy to have relieved. And while these homeschoolers are giving up that, they still do have access to our tax deduction and tax credit based on their income for these kinds of acquisitions. And they have become very creative in terms of book exchanges and other means of acquiring learning materials that have reduced the cost. So this saves the money that would be the state would lose in Senator Thompson's bill and a more modified cost that we'll get to in Senate File 40. The fiscal note that you have does not is let's see let me explain a little bit that we renegotiated with the department and we haven't gotten an updated fiscal note on it yet, but the amount that the they were estimating costs of 47 was it 47 $43,000 for rulemaking to change the rules based on this change process of coverage of the service. And in reexamination, they believe that it would not take that kind of a rulemaking procedure and that the maximum would be about $10,000. So that number Mr. Nauman, I won't call him Senator, won't wish that on him. He does too good a job where he's at. So it would be reduced to a 41,000. Let me see now. Where are we doing it? It would be reduced to 10,000 if you look at on line 28 from 43 down to 10, which will change the bottom line for this particular bill. So I don't know if there's any questions you have.
Well, Senator,
Tuma is also here to answer any questions you might have related to the either fiscal impact or the bill itself. And Mr. Nauman is available to clarify if my explanation has been garbled.
Well, Senator Olson, I appreciate you bringing a package of bills from the Education Committee that actually have a net savings to the state. Do any members have questions about the fiscal impact of Senate File 56?
Just one.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Olson. So this, correct me if I'm wrong, because maybe I'm not understanding, this allows both all non-public schools and home schools to not have to use any tests except a nationally recognized college entrance exam in order for the student to graduate.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair and Senator Goodwin, this applies to the homeschool provisions.
Okay.
I'm not sure that we have that requirement. But they had actually greater requirements. There's the whole law isn't here.
Okay.
Those provisions did not apply to the parochial or non-public schools.
Oh, well,
Senator Goodwin?
Madam Chair, I'm looking at the explanation from Senate Counsel, paragraph A, and it says allows non-public schools to assess students using a national. Is that wrong, then, using a nationally recognized college entrance exam?
Senator Olson?
It says the words are allows non-public schools, so I would expect that would
apply. Well, Madam Chair, we have nothing to say about the exams that the non-public schools have now. With the exception of homeschools, we have had some provisions in there that were more definitive, and that is what we're changing.
Okay, Madam Chair, then
Senator Goodwin.
I think this explanation is wrong because it specifically says that non-public schools can assess students using a nationally recognized college entrance exam. So sure, they could use more tests, but they don't have to. It would be my reading of that summary that they wouldn't. Non-public schools wouldn't have to use anything but the college entrance exam.
And do whatever they
want. Mr. Tuma, do you want to identify yourself?
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is John Tuma. I'm with the Homeschool Association known as MSHE. And the answer to your question, Senator Goodwin, is present law allows families or requires families to do a national norm reference test. And that still stays in law. It seemed kind of silly when the child turned 15 and they took the plan test that we had to also take the Iowa Basics test. And so when a child turns 15 and may be taking an ACT or a plan test that is an accepted college entrance style exam, that they don't have to do also at the same time a nationally norm referenced test like the Iowa Basics test or the California Achievement Test. And so it just allows them to substitute in that college exam test as opposed to doing the national norm reference test. Apparently, according to the people understand those tests, even though they are norm referenced, aren't considered nationally norm referenced tests. And so that's the only reason we specifically include that language. And so homeschoolers in issuing diplomas do not have to go through the same testing protocol that public schools do, as does BREC or SPA or whatever. They don't have to do the same testing requirements that a public school would go through.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions about Senate File 56? Or, sorry, 69?
Well, Madam Chair, if there are no further questions, I would move that Senate File 69, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and move to the floor.
If there are no other questions, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Okay, the motion does pass, and Senate File 69 is recommended to pass and will go to the floor. Senator Olson also has the next bill, Senate File 40 on alternative teacher licensure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I asked Senator Bonoff to join me. She was with me at the table at the Education Committee, and we have been co-authors, and Senator Bonoff has chief authored this in the past, another two-year or several-year endeavor in achieving the alternative licensure provision. I do have an amendment here because we're addressing the fiscal impact, and the fiscal impact is higher than it really needs to be, and there's a provision that was driving that, and we are altering that so that we can reduce that cost, and that has to do with the reciprocity provisions from other states. There were some concerns that the Board of Teaching did raise with us, and they were legitimate ones, that the language was such that it was open too wide in terms of all other states' licensure programs rather than the narrower approach that we had really intended. And so by removing that, they will not have to add another employee to handle the evaluation and comparison of the standards between one state and another in terms of determining whether they are alike or similar. And so that this amendment does in fact remove those provisions and alter them to what the original intent is. And then it does drive the fiscal note, because the action hasn't been taken, will bring, I can get both of them. The other one? Where's Mr. Nauman? Is he here? See if I've got the original one here.
So that we have a figure as to what the dollar amount is?
Yes, it brings the rulemaking cost down for teacher licensure to $44,000. I think you have a figure. I don't have the one that's in a folder with me, but or maybe I do. Yeah, there's an $104,000 for adding the ed specialist and rulemaking for out of state applicants. So there's $114,000 that this amendment removes. So we're left with $44,000, which is again covered by the homeschool mandate relief.
Hey, Mr. Nauman, do you have anything to add to that?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, no.
Okay. So,
and Madam Chair,
we've reduced our fiscal note. More good news on that.
Madam Chair, just for members who have not served on the Education Committee, and just to remind those who weren't previously in the Senate, not only have we passed this bill in the Senate the last 2 years, we passed off the Senate floor the year before last, but last year it didn't come to the Senate floor.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just want to clarify, the fiscal note shows as part of the cost, and as Senator Olson was pointing out, one full-time equivalent employee added, I assume that's the Department of Education. Am I correct in reading that the annual cost for one full-time employee to do the work of determining whether or not another state's program complies or is consistent with what this law would require, that's $100,000 cost a year?
Madam Chair, and Senator Hahn, I believe I'm recalling this correctly, that inside the text of the fiscal note, they're estimating that there's about 20 hours of work associated with each teacher that comes from out of state to just confirm that they have the right standards and that everything is kosher. So essentially, yes, they are booking $104,000 for salary and benefits for an additional employee to do that work. The amendment that's before the committee today would simplify that and eliminate that requirement. That takes away the $10,000 of rulemaking on line five, as well as eliminate the need for that professional education specialist.
Madam Chair, maybe to Senator Goodwin's point, we ought to pass a law to require education specialists not make more than the governor. I don't know, just a thought.
Madam Chair, if I might, I would also emphasize that in those cases where we're talking about the Department of Education budget, we don't have the full budget in front of us here today. This is a representation of what additional burdens would be placed on the department and their best guess of what additional costs that would be required. However, it's ultimately up to the legislature to determine whether that is something we actually appropriate. Sometimes in fiscal parlance, the department is asked to eat that cost, and that's an option that's available, although this amendment strikes that language, so it's kind of a moot discussion. But for future conversation, it's worth considering.
Senator Olson, shall we move your amendment?
Well, I thank you, Madam Chair. I would appreciate if you would. I will move the amendment.
Senator Olson moves that recommends that the A7 amendment be recommended to pass. Mm-hmm. Is there any further discussion on it? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. Okay, so the bill is in the shape that you want, Senator Olson?
And Madam Chair, I think Karen Baumer wanted to add.
The motion prevails.
Excuse me. Thank you. Karen Baumer from the Board of Teaching would like to, I think, clarify and probably respond to Senator Hahn's.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Olson, Karen Baumer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching, I would like to respond because you raised some very legitimate and important questions about what does that number reflect, and it's important to put some context around that. We did look very carefully at the language in terms of how it might be come to life and how we would actually operationalize that language. What we found after review and some internal dialogue both with the Board of Teaching and MDE's Educator Licensing Division, we came to a number of conclusions that led to this. First of all, this would be a full-time position because what's required in here is that effectively we would begin receiving recommendations for licensure from 49 other states, and not just the states, a license approved and issued by a state body, but by potentially schools. So at a bare minimum, the first step that we would need to do is verify the principal signing off on this. We don't have a roster of national principals across the country in 49 states and however many hundreds of thousands of schools across the country. So there are very practical things. And then benchmarking that back to the language called for in the original language that would have those teachers perform against our standards of effective practice, there are 123 of those standards of effective practice in current rule. So the actual formal evaluation that is called for is really significant. So we estimated that would be some kind of a portfolio process that would have to come and be reviewed by a staff. That staff would have to be someone that had an education background to know and understand those standards of effective practice that drove the classification that is what in that education world is an education specialist too. And then if you go into the bargaining unit agreements, you'd find that on the salary schedule and their benefits follow. And so that's where the number came from.
Are there any other questions?
Would they be willing to eat the 44?
Is there any further discussion?
Well, Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 40 be as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
Yeah. So Senator Olson moves that Senate File 40 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. Is there any other testimony? Please identify yourself.
Madam Chair, members, Daniel Sellers, and I serve as Executive Director with Teach for America in the Twin Cities. Seeing that folks are getting ready to vote, I'll be very, very brief. Serving as executive director with Teach for America in the Twin Cities, as many of you know, Teach for America is just one example of a high-quality alternative preparation program, one that would be given a platform and allowed to have a sustainable future here in the Twin Cities and across Minnesota if this bill is passed into law. And in terms of the fiscal impact, and I will try to be brief, I'll start by saying the problem of the achievement gap, which is the main focus of this bill, is real. By the time they enter high school, more than 80% of Minnesota's Latino students are unprepared to read grade-level material. Although 82% of white students graduate from high school, only 44% of African-American students and 45% of Latino students graduated in 2009. More shockingly, only 3% of English language learner 8th grade students can read proficiently. And perhaps most shockingly, African-American 4th graders in Minnesota score worse than African-American students in Alabama and Kentucky. What does all of this mean? Well, the economic implications are tremendous for the state of Minnesota. One of the handouts that was prepared by State Farm lists some of the incredible economic impacts that just the 3,000 students of color who don't graduate from high school in the Minneapolis metropolitan area, the negative economic impacts that those students have. And in terms of lost income, we're talking about $22.8 million. In terms of lost spending and investment, somewhere between $15 and $20 million. And in terms of lost sales of homes and autos, we're looking at about $70 million for those students who do not graduate on time, who are dropping out from high school, and who are not getting the education they deserve. I think we as a state need to step up and look at alternative options, new methods for preparing teachers. Teach for America is an organization that has a track record of success, and in almost all the studies that have been conducted have shown that Teach for America, which is an alternative preparation program, is effectively closing the achievement gap, putting students on a new life path, and, of course, giving them the opportunities and fiscal resources to be productive and contributing citizens. So I urge you to pass the bill and give us a new route to support these students.
Does anyone have any questions for our testifier? Senator Goodwin?
One, thank you, Madam Chair. How is this bill, and I haven't been on the Education Committee, but from what you just said, I think you probably shouldn't have said anything because I think it was ready to vote, but from what you just said, what I'm understanding is that you're blaming the public school teachers. How can this bill help the achievement gap if it's not what I'm hearing, the fault of the public school teachers? How will this bill help?
Mr. Sellers.
Madam Chair, Senator Goodwin, I'm not, by no means am I blaming the public school teachers. I think Teach for America and all of the many organizations that are supporting this legislation are saying we need as many good teachers as we can get into the classroom and as many routes as possible to get those great teachers into the classroom. And if this legislation allows for more creative ways to get more great teachers in the classroom, it's one that we need to support as one part of a broad set of solutions that are going to start to work to close the achievement gap. Teach for America, in just the most recent studies, one done in University of North Carolina where they were actually looking at their own preparation route versus their graduates, and in Tennessee, which looked at all preparation routes of teachers, found that Teach for America teachers, as one route among many, are effectively closing the achievement gap. And so it's not to say that we don't have many phenomenal teachers across the state of Minnesota. This is another way to get great, talented leaders into the classroom who are willing to do whatever it takes to support their students and who work alongside their colleagues prepared traditionally to ensure that their students are successful. So this bill is not a silver bullet solution. It is among one of many suggested solutions for bringing talented folks into the classroom to help us attack the problem of the achievement gap. And so that's what this bill seeks to do, in my understanding.
Thank you.
If there's no other questions, Senator Olson renews her motion that Senate File 40, as amended, be recommended to pass. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The bill does pass and will be sent to the floor. With no other business before the committee, Senator Cohen was excused for today, and we plan to meet again on Thursday morning. It'll be a joint hearing with the Tax Committee again. It'll be in room 15, and it will be on the 21st Century Report, the Budget Commission report. Yeah. And so we hope that you'll be able to join us there. If there's no other business, the meeting is adjourned.